I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. And this hour of the program, we're going to be talking about how the Donald Trump administration will handle a whole host of environmental issues. Starting with the news of this morning, Democrats, you may have heard, failed to show up for a planned vote today on the Environmental Protection Agency nominee Scott Pruitt, who's the Attorney General of Oklahoma. And Democrats had their staff distribute an amendment from Ranking Member Tom Carper from Delaware that would add new standards requiring nominees to submit more financial information. That prompted this response from the Republican from Oklahoma, who said Scott Pruitt has answered more questions than any nominee in the last three presidential administrations. And so we're going to be talking about that to start the show. And then we'll look at the Keystone Pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline, climate change, where funds are going for research, a whole host of issues. Jason Plotz is our guest. He's an energy and environment correspondent for National Journal, has covered transportation and the EPA for Greenwire, and his writing has appeared in Metal Floss, The Atlantic.com, Pacific Standard, Inside Climate News, and Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're delighted to have you with us, Jason. Hello. Thanks very much for being with us. Oh, you're on a different line. I'm sorry. Hello, Jason. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad I found you. Let's start with the Democrats' action this morning. It's interesting that some other ones went through without the Democrats being there, the Health and Human Services nominee and Treasury, but this one did not go through this morning. Can you explain why and if this is an effective tactic and what the Democrats hope to achieve by not showing up?
Sure. Well, this sort of Democratic boycott has become a bit of a trend here on the Hill. We saw a number of votes yesterday. Democrats didn't show up. And then obviously today in the EPW committee, they didn't show up for the EPA nominee. Now, this morning, I believe it was the HHS or the Finance Committee this morning changed the rules temporarily to allow Republicans to hold the vote without Democrats present. And that's how they were able to push through their nominees. The EPW chairman, John Barrasso, said he wasn't going to do that today. He didn't necessarily rule it out in the future. So we'll have to see when they call this vote back again, if they decide to change the rules or if Democrats decide to show up. There's actually a bit of precedent for it in this committee with this position. Back in 2013, Republicans boycotted a vote on Gina McCarthy, who was the nominee to become the EPA administrator. And that got held up for several months, actually, until they reached a resolution.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting about this one is that you have in this nominee, as you remind us, a bid to head the EPA, not just a typical confirmation battle. It represents a debate over how the agency itself actually should function.
Exactly. I mean, I think the reason you're seeing so many Democrats take such action here is because Scott Pruitt really represents a fundamental change to the way that the EPA would be run. You mentioned he was the Attorney General of Oklahoma. In that position, he sued the EPA 14 times over different regulations. That's a number Democrats have brought up a number of times. Another thing that you're going to hear from Democrats a lot that you have heard are going to continue to hear until he reaches the floor is that in the hearing and written responses to questions, Pruitt did not name an environmental statute that he supports and wants to uphold. Pruitt has said he's not going to hurt the EPA's core mission of clean air, clean water, environmental protection, but most of what you heard from him is about rolling back regulations, cutting the agency's budget, cutting some of the staff. So it really is a fundamental difference than the last 8 years, and even Republican administrations.
And I would imagine that on a larger scope, we'll also see a fundamental change in a number of environmental issues. Already we've seen the Keystone and the Dakota pipelines. They will be, the president had stopped those. They're going to be carried on here. We've got some question about money that's going on for research projects and whether or not scientists are able to have things published or have even press releases given out without approval from the White House. It's all kind of up in the air, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think You know, obviously the difference between the Trump administration and the Obama administration on a number of issues is going to be, you know, night and day. I think energy is going to be one of the biggest ones, though. You saw the Obama administration really took a lot of action to protect the environment, fight climate change. Meanwhile, Trump campaigned on expanding oil and gas development. You know, he famously said climate change was a hoax. He doesn't want to see us join the or stay in the Paris Agreement, the United Nations Agreement on Climate Change. So it's really, you know, night and day between these two administrations.
Mm-hmm. And did he do the Keystone and Dakota Pipeline decision by an executive order here? Did he just say policy is reversed? How did that happen?
Sure. That was there were two presidential memorandums. And so what he did not approve the pipelines necessarily. What he did was he kind of kickstarted the process for bringing them back. So the Keystone Pipeline, which very famously was denied by the Obama administration, what President Trump did last week was he instructed, he allowed TransCanada, the company that was going to build the pipeline, to reapply for its permit. And then he told the State Department that they would have to reach a decision on that quickly, within 60 days, I believe, was the terms of the agreement. He did say that he was going to renegotiate some of the terms on that pipeline. It's unclear what exactly that means. One thing that could mean is that he would require the pipeline only use American steel, which would actually be quite a burden for TransCanada. But TransCanada has already submitted its application, so we'll see where the State Department takes it from there. Mm. And then on Dakota Access, likewise, he did not approve the pipeline. Full stop. What he said was he instructed the Army Corps of Engineers to take action to review the pipeline that had been put on hold by the Obama administration right at the end of the administration.
What's interesting is the role of protests in all of this, because I can remember when there was a great deal of pressure on President Obama to suspend the Keystone Pipeline, and it took protests, big protests, lengthy protests, people chaining themselves to fences, et cetera, at the White House, for him to change his mind on the Keystone Pipeline, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you'll remember back in the sort of in the early days of the protest, the administration agreed to delay their decision on the pipeline, and that was seen as such a tremendous victory. That was kind of more than some of the protesters had expected to get. And then you get, you know, the administration decided not to go ahead with the permit at all. Likewise, the Dakota Access, the protest by the Native American community, mm-hmm. Really put that on the map and forced the Obama administration, I think, to reconsider that. And as part of their statement, when they sort of put things on hold and had the Army Corps of Engineers re-examine the leasing, the permit decision, they said that they were going to reopen more discussions with the Native American community on infrastructure projects like that.
Do you imagine that we're going to see on both of these issues continued protests? We've seen so many protests already in such a short period of time for the new administration. Will there be large protests on these issues once again?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I believe it was last Tuesday that he signed these two memorandums. Tuesday night, there were already protests at the White House against the Keystone and the Dakota Access Pipeline. So I think it's safe to say that the protest movement is not going away. The oil and gas industry support for these pipelines is not going away. It's all going to continue just the way we saw it, although likely with a different outcome.
Mm-hmm. And what about climate change? What happens with the Paris Agreement at this point?
Sure. The Paris Agreement, that's a good question. During the campaign, Trump said that he wanted to withdraw from the agreement. Withdrawing from the agreement is actually quite a lengthy process. It's something that would take about 4 years to do. There's a workaround that would take about 1 year, but that would withdraw us from the sort of fundamental basic climate change pact at the UN. That's seen as a pretty drastic step, a big symbol that would be sent to the rest of the world. We saw a lot of diplomats saying, don't do that. That's going to send the wrong signal to our allies. And even Rex Tillerson, the State Department nominee, who I believe just a few minutes ago was approved by the Senate, he said in his hearing that he didn't necessarily want to leave. He said it would be in our interest to be at the table on the Paris Agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see. I think one thing that is pretty clear, though, even if we stay in the agreement, we're not going to be holding up our end. The Obama administration The U.S. commitment says that we're going to cut our emissions 26 to 28%. That was based on some pretty big standards: the Clean Power Plan, emissions cuts from power plants, fuel economy standards for vehicles, various emissions cuts across the board. Those are all things that the Trump administration is likely to reexamine or try to get rid of. It's hard to see how the U.S. meets its commitment to the Paris Agreement, even if we stay in the agreement.
Mm-hmm. And what about scientists, people who are working in climate science, who are looking at energy and renewable energy and the effects of coal and oil, et cetera, and fracking? What about all of those scientists? Are they allowed to publish their work? Is it being taken seriously? Are there gag orders now? Do you know?
Sure. That's a good question. So it was reported last week that, especially at the EPA, that there was a gag order. What that was, in speaking with some of the transition team officials, was they just wanted to examine public releases that were coming out of the agency. Obviously, going from the Obama administration to the Trump administration, there's going to be a bit of a different message coming out. And what they didn't want to see was basically social media, press releases, new posts being put up on official blogs that were sending a different message than the White House was going to deliver. So they sort of put a hold on that. It was pretty broad across the board. There's also a lot more communication than there have been in any other presidential transition. Obviously, with the rise of social media and the internet, there's just a lot more communication coming out, which is why that freeze was so broad. The question on scientists is a little trickier. It's unclear. Some scientists have said, that they're under a bit of a gag order as well, that science isn't going to be coming out of this administration. The transition team's officials are saying that they're not trying to review the science. They're not trying to review scientific reports before they go out, inject politics into those decisions and releases. So I think it remains to be seen. It's going to be a bit of a feeling out process. I think pretty universally, though, from the scientific community, they do not see this administration being as friendly to their work and as supportive of their work than the Obama administration was. That's why we saw this big, it was called the Data Refuge, where scientists and just interested stakeholders were downloading public data from the from agency websites, from NOAA, from NASA, from EPA, from the White House itself. They wanted to make sure that they could preserve this data just in case it vanished from the website or just in case something happened to it in the transition.
Hmm. How would you compare this time? I think it was true in the Bush administration as well that political appointees censored climate science reports from government agencies and mostly got away with it by gagging the scientist. I think the figure was half of 1,600 government scientists at seven agencies that went from NASA to the EPA had been warned against using terms like global warming in reports or speeches throughout President George W. Bush's your presidency. It's not new, huh?
No, certainly not. And I think that's you'll hear that a lot. The scientists are very concerned about returning to those sort of standards from the George W. Bush era. There was also in Canada there was a similar sort of gag, and scientists are very scared of returning to those days. We don't know the appointees at the EPA head is obviously not there. The DOE, the DOI head, the Commerce Secretary who runs NOAA is not there. We're going to have to see over the next few months as these political appointees enter their positions how things actually shake out.
Mm-hmm. And what about the Democrats' point? Did they have a point here in not showing up for the hearing this morning that they felt like they had more than 1,000 follow-up questions after his hearing on January 18? Was it too short a hearing? Do they have legitimately 1,000 more questions?
I can say, as somebody who sat there during the hearing, it was not too short. That was not the issue. As I said, Scott Pruitt represents a very, very different EPA administrator than people have ever seen before, including under Republican presidents. That's why Democrats had so many questions. They also have a lot of questions, again, because he's filed lawsuits against the agency so many times,
right.
And he has financial ties. He's worked for the Republican Attorneys General Association and the 501c4 offshoot, the Rule of Law Defense Fund. There are a lot of questions about who was donating to that, the Rule Rule of Law Defense Fund, what sort of work Scott Pruitt did on behalf of those donors and sort of how all those ties come together. That wasn't something that he really answered in the hearing or in his written responses. That's why Democrats have so many outstanding questions.
Did you get a sense of why somebody who would want to run an agency that he had filed lawsuit against so many times?
Well, I think he just has a different philosophy on how it should be run. He is not a regulatory guy. You know, he's not somebody like Lisa Jackson or Gina McCarthy, the two EPA administrators under Obama, who saw the role of the agency to take the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, all these environmental statutes, and craft regulations, use the power of the agency to fight climate change. That's not the way that he views the agency. He says that things should be done at the state level. If you listen to Pruitt, he says if a state wants to, do more action on climate change, restrict the oil and gas industry, cut emissions from power plants, they're more than welcome to do that. If a state doesn't want to do that, a state like Oklahoma, which has a robust oil and gas industry, they don't want to see more regulations. So he says, let's leave it up to the states, not the federal level.
Hmm. And yet, other states, Oklahoma also has a whole lot of earthquakes, doesn't it? And there's a lot of science that's looking at the possibility of fracking causing some of those earthquakes.
Right, that's right. And that's been a big question. Pruitt and Governor Mary Fallon seem to be pretty slow to pick up on the earthquake issue, even as there was science tying it to the fracking and the gas industry that was going on. They did eventually start to investigate it a little bit more. But that's something we heard from Democrats a lot. Look at what was going on in your own state. If there's an environmental disaster, an environmental trend going on in the nation that might go against an industry that you're allied with, are you going to go after it and investigate it with any sort of zeal? That's the type of question that Democrats want to hear him answer.
Hmm. Jason Plautz is our guest this hour, energy environment correspondent for National Journal. He's also covered transportation in the EPA for Greenwire. His writing has appeared in a number of other publications. He's a Midwesterner, a native of Shaker Heights, Ohio, and graduated from Northwestern University. We're going to take phone calls for him. We're talking about the EPA. We're looking at Donald Trump's administration when it comes to environmental issues. We're looking at the Keystone Pipeline, the Access, North Dakota Access Pipeline. We're looking at all kinds of environment-related issues, climate change, scientists, the work of scientists. What about federal grants for science? We'll talk about that some. And wherever you'd like to go with this, 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. And this is the Ideas Network. Okay, let's go to phone calls. Wallace in Weyerhaeuser. Hi, Wallace.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Did you say Wallace?
I sure did. Are you
yes,
Wallace?
Okay.
All right, Wallace.
Great program. I'm sitting here listening, every day on this environmental issue, and you think that it's too bad. There's too many deaf ears. Don't listen. Hope is eternal, but I don't think it's going to happen because I just had a friend who had come from the Dakotas, and he's been up there about a month and a half. And he was not on the protest. He was there for a different purpose. And he said, before the inauguration, you could see what the pipeline was already doing. He said, tons and tons and tons of new pipeline equipment was coming in there and being stacked up preparatory for some more pipeline. So you can see what the Trump administration, it was cut and dried as soon as they knew he was going to be president. It's going to be pretty hard to beat these guys.
Thanks very much for your call. Jason.
I think, as I said, the administration certainly seems to be more supportive of building this pipeline and other oil and gas pipelines. And actually, the Army Corps of Engineers said today that they've taken some of the initial steps on approving the final permit. They haven't finished it. They haven't granted the easement under the Missouri River, which is sort of the final issue here. They have taken the initial steps. It's also worth noting, I think we saw, we mentioned the protests earlier, which really forced the Obama administration's hand. Those protests aren't going away, and we've seen the Standing Rock Sioux has already said that they're going to file a lawsuit against this, and they're going to continue their legal challenges, certainly continue their protest movement. Again, it looks like if you're going to game it out, the end game is probably that the pipeline will be approved and be built, but it's certainly not going to go quickly and easily.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how that protest became known, because they've been protesting for a long time and received almost no attention, and then all of a sudden, they were everywhere.
Right. It built up. It got a lot of support from different progressive movements as well. It's interesting. With the Keystone movement, we saw a lot of there were Native American protests and Native American opposition, but a lot of it came from the environmental community saying that expanding the, using this Keystone pipeline, which would expand the tar sands development in Canada, is going to be a climate killer. Game over for the climate was what they said. With the Dakota Access Pipeline, it really started with the Standing Rock Sioux and those Native American communities, and roped in a lot of other progressive movements. As, more headlines happened, as more media attention got there, more progressive movements joined, and it really, reached the level that the White House had to respond.
Hmm. Thank you very much, Wallace, for your call. Our number, by the way, we have lines open. What do you expect to see in terms of environmental impact of a Donald Trump presidency is what we're talking about. We're also talking about what happened today with the Democrats not showing up for the committee that is going to be voting on Scott Pruitt to be head of the EPA, saying they still had about 1,000 questions for him. And unlike the other committees who decided to go ahead with nominations for this particular committee, there will be another day, of hearings?
They'll call another vote at some point. It remains to be seen. I mentioned that this happened in 2013. Republicans boycotted the vote for Gina McCarthy. What happened there then Chairman Barbara Boxer, a Democrat, worked the rules so that as long as all of the Democratic members were present, that counted as a quorum. It was able to be a vote. Republicans ended up agreeing to come to the hearing ahead of time. The issue there was one of the members of the committee, Frank Lautenberg, was ill. He was back at home in New Jersey. He finally said he was going to be healthy enough to make it. That was going to give Democrats the full majority, their quorum. So Republicans kind of reached an agreement on some of the outstanding issues that they had, agreed to come to the vote. It's unclear if that's what Chairman John Barrasso is going to try to do this time, get all the members there in one room at one time, try to force a vote that way. Maybe he'll change the rules. Maybe Democrats will decide that, they've made their statement, or they get some agreement from Pruitt to answer more questions, and they'll come to the vote. It's sort of a lot of options are still open here.
Ken is next caller from Eau Claire. Hi, Ken.
Hi. I am a big Trump supporter, but I guess when it comes to global warming, I mean, if you can't see that, then I guess you're blind. But my question is it, there's obviously things we can do to slow this down, but at this point, do you believe that it's too late to even stop it?
That's a good question. Not a cheery question. That's been a big issue, and we saw this a lot after the Paris Agreement, right, where all the countries got together and said, we're going to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. And we heard some scientists saying that's not enough. That's going to limit some of the damage, but it's not going to prevent or roll back some of the damage. As you pointed out, it may not be enough to do everything that the countries have agreed to, but certainly doing nothing is not the right answer. Doing nothing is, going to accelerate the damage.
Thank you very much for your call, Ken. We have this message from John. These deregulations are going to have a direct effect on western Wisconsin with more fracking and also mining. Would you agree with that assessment?
It remains to be seen. Certainly the administration wants to expand fracking, expand mining, expand coal and gas production. There are still limits, and there are also, it's important to note, market conditions. You know, even if you lift all the regulations on this, it's not guaranteed that companies are going to want to produce this. This is something we're seeing a lot with the coal industry. Right, Trump promised he was going to bring back coal. He was going to lift the war on coal, end it. The reality is natural gas is cheaper than coal right now for energy production. So it's not like, you know, it's not like lifting all the restrictions is going to bring coal back automatically. And that's something that Mitch McConnell has even said himself, the majority leader from Kentucky, coal state. He's even said lifting all the restrictions isn't necessarily going to bring the industry back. So there are still market conditions as well. I think certainly you would expect to see more fossil fuel development under the Trump administration, less sort of incentive for renewables, less incentives for, you know, wind and solar. But you're likely going to see more development as the market allows.
Our number is 800-486-8655. What about research? There is this money that's going to people all over the country and universities to study various aspects of, climate change and where we new areas of renewable energy that maybe we haven't even thought about. What's happening with grants?
So the grants out of the EPA, this is where a lot of the reporting was. They were put on hold last week, a temporary freeze, as the transition team tried to just look and review all of them. That has been lifted. Those grants are now coming back out. It remains to be seen what's going to happen to those grants and scientific research long term. We saw, for example, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I think I got that right.
You did, yes.
Okay. Well, they do a lot of climate research, right? They monitor all the weather satellites, and they bring in a lot of new data, a lot of new research. Wilbur Ross, who's the Commerce Secretary, holds NOAA. NOAA is part of Commerce. He said that he wants to continue that research. At the DOE, for example, Rick Perry was asked about threats to cut some of the renewable energy programs or consolidating some in the labs. He said that he wants to support the scientists. I think broader term, we see a lot of folks on the right want to cut back some of that research. They say it's not necessarily the government's role, especially when it comes to renewable energy. They say that that's work that could be done in the private market. The government shouldn't be pushing certain types of technology by doing this kind of research. We'll have to see how things shake out. Certainly the scientific community is very on guard at the moment. They want to make sure that these research grants, all these research programs are protected, and they're keeping a careful eye on them.
We go to Trevor, is it, in Viroqua?
Yeah. Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Sweet. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I just got three quick points. The first point, how can people deny human-made climate change when you look at the planet from space at night and it's lit up like a Christmas tree? I mean, if we can affect how the planet looks like at night, clearly we can affect the climate. The second point is, without the EPA, and if Trump, puts a lot of limitations on it, we're not going to be able to, have clean streams and air. We're going to end up like China with their streams polluted and tons of smog everywhere. And then the last point I have is I think the industry with all the fossil fuels, it's kind of like the smoking industry back in the day where they were just bribing politicians to be like, yeah, it doesn't cause cancer. And all these politicians are saying, yeah, it's, fossil fuels aren't causing climate change. And those are my three points.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Jason?
That does go along with, it's interesting. We heard, when during the campaign, Trump said climate change is a hoax. He famously tweeted that it was a hoax caused by China. Now that we've seen some of his cabinet nominees come through and have to answer questions at their committee hearings, we're hearing sort of a different message. A lot of them are saying the climate is changing. Humans do have a role. It's not clear what exactly the role is, what extent humans are doing it. They say more study is needed. The scientific consensus, of course, is that the climate is changing. Humans are the cause, and that we need to reverse human impact to affect climate change. These cabinet nominees and what seems to be the position of the Trump administration is more of a climate ambiguity instead of climate denial. It's sort of a form of climate denial, but a little softer. But again, it's the whole point is introducing some doubt into the mix. That's been sort of the stated position from a lot of the nominees so far.
Marion in Eau Claire, hi.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, Marion.
Yeah, my question was how the oil companies got away with all this right of eminent domain when it's only supposed to be for, still there?
Yeah, we're here. You want to turn your radio down, Marion, so we can hear each other. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's to do with the right of eminent domain when it's supposed to only be for, like, hospitals, highways, the things that help everybody. But the only people making out on this are the oil companies.
Jason, yeah?
I can take the answer off there.
Okay. Thank you, Marion.
Thanks. Well, again, this kind of goes to a big question that's coming in the Trump administration, which is how much leeway will the oil and gas industry have? We saw the Obama administration, especially right at the end, take a lot of steps to limit some oil and gas development. They took areas of the Arctic and the Atlantic completely offline for offshore drilling, did a lot of monument protections through the Antiquities Act in public lands, trying to limit oil and gas and infrastructure development on those areas. The Trump administration says, you know, they're going to open this up. But a lot of the steps the Obama administration took have not really been challenged in court, especially the Antiquities Act. No president has tried to revoke a monument designation that a previous president has made. So it's entering uncharted legal territory if Congress, the White House, or private industry decides to challenge that. Really opens up a lot of interesting questions for public lands groups and some of these anti-drilling groups.
Tammy is next in Abbotsford. Hi, Tammy.
Hi. I have for years wanted to ask a committed Republican, don't they think that their own children and grandchildren will be affected by lead poisoning, mercury poisoning, fine particles in the air? I mean, what are they thinking? Do they not think that their family and loved ones are going to be affected by the lack of regulation on the environment?
Jason.
Well, this is, a question that Scott Pruitt was asked a number of times. I can't remember what the number was, but one of the Democrats brought up the number of children in Oklahoma who have asthma. And he sort of asked, well, what would you say to those children? Again, it's important to say what Scott Pruitt said in his hearing was he didn't want to get rid of, limits on lead, limits on smog, for example, though he actually did challenge the ground-level ozone ruling, which we know is ground-level smog. Republicans have said they support the core mission of the EPA, the clean air protections, clean water protections. What they say is the Obama administration was sort of out of control with them. Now, you can debate whether or not that's true. Certainly, the Obama administration was following the advice of its own scientists when they released these regulations. That's sort of the stated position of the Republicans, is they want environmental protection. They don't want too much environmental protection.
And would they have said that Richard Nixon was out of control?
No, certainly not. Ask a Republican about the EPA, and they will certainly remind you that Richard Nixon was the one who set that agency up.
Right. Thank you very much for your call, Terry. Let us go to Stella, who wants to talk about the origins of the EPA. Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I was quite alarmed when you said that the nominee to head the EPA has said that he does not think it's the federal government's role to regulate the environmental issues and challenges or threats to the environment, but that it should be up to the state. And I don't know for sure, but my understanding is that this is exactly how the EPA came into existence, was that states were not regulating pollution. And if your state doesn't want to regulate water pollution, then they pollute pollute all their water, it flows right into my state, and my state gets your polluted water. And if your state doesn't want to regulate air pollution, my state, the country, the whole world gets your air pollution, and that it can't be left up to the states, who that's how the EPA came into existence, and that there is a very real need for that oversight, that large oversight.
That's exactly right. You know, we did see, as you pointed out, pollution doesn't obey state borders. You know, the pollution that comes out of a power plant in one state is going to drift across to another state. The trash in the water in one state is going to flow down to another state. That's just the reality of geography. And that is a big reason why the EPA was set up, to have sort of a federal oversight of the pollution that's going across state lines, make sure that everybody was doing the same thing, limiting pollution so that it wasn't affecting other states.
Thanks, Sally, very much for your call. Can we talk to you a little bit more about Pruitt? Do you know why he was nominated?
Well, he was nominated because he has this philosophy. You know, it's been interesting watching the Senate. Republicans and Democrats have really split on the environment. What used to be kind of a crossover issue,
right.
You see a lot of, you know, sort of moderate Republicans voting with Democrats, some oil state Democrats voting with Republicans, has really become very, very strictly divided. And a big part of it has to do with this basic philosophy of how much should the EPA be regulating. Scott Pruitt comes in. He's a big federalist, wants to break things down to the state level. You know, he's very famous for suing the agency 14 times. Republicans really want to see that. They want to see that philosophy put at the EPA to see what can be done. And that's a big reason why he was picked. The other names on the short list all held the same philosophy. So it's
interesting.
It's not like they picked Pruitt out because he was, you know, the most extreme or unique among the list. Pretty much everybody on the short list was going to have somewhat of this philosophy.
Well, how did that evolve? Because as you just said, there was a time not that long ago when there were a number of Republicans, a number of Democrats. It was a very bipartisan issue. Environmental issues were of concern to everybody.
Well, a big part of it has to do with the broader trend we've seen on the right. You know, the sort of rise of the conservatives. You know, folks are worried. They don't want to see themselves get primaried because they're saying they believe in climate change, or they want to see restrictions on the oil and gas industry. Even in the broader public, the partisanship on this issue, if you look at sort of belief in climate change, should we act on climate change? How quickly should we act on climate change? There's a pretty deep partisan divide on this issue. And it's one that has not gone away. And certainly we saw President Obama try to do this, try to reach out to the right a little bit. It just did not work. So there's a pretty big divide on this, and a lot of the environmental moderates from the right are no longer in the Senate. We saw recently Mark Kirk and Kelly Ayotte, who were seen as two somewhat moderates on this issue, on climate change and on environmental issues, both got voted out, replaced with Democrats. So environmental groups say, well, this is better. But the truth is, a lot of the moderates are just not winning elections anymore.
Justin in Winona. Hi, Justin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was kind of curious because it seems to me the EPA has a kind of a bad public image, and I'm kind of wondering where is this stemming from? All the cases that have been brought upon polluting the public, you know, like the movie Aaron Brockovich and everything else. I'm just kind of wondering why does the EPA have such a bad reputation with the public?
That's a good question. I think it might also depend on who you ask. I bet you could find people who say the EPA is great and they love the EPA. I mean, part of it does have to do with, as I said, as these regulations come down, they're sort of a poster child for the regulatory state. You know, Republicans will consistently bring up how many and how expensive EPA regulations are, sort of using it as kind of a boogeyman as they talk about, you know, broader issues of federalism and excessive regulation. so the, you know, the EPA does get some flack there. And then on the flip side, EPA, you know, look at what happened in Flint. You know, when there was this lead poisoning yes. incident in Flint that left a lot of people sick without drinking water, et cetera. That was an EPA failure, and the federal EPA has admitted as much that they did not respond as quickly as they needed to. So, you know, on the flip side, when something goes wrong, it's going to come to the EPA, and they're the ones who made the mistake.
Thank you so much for your call. Let's go next to Gail in Fish Creek. Hello, Gail.
Good evening, the rain. Hello.
Hi, Gail. Go ahead.
Oh, am I on the radio?
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got the... Oh, Steve, we'll be with you in a second. We go to Gail. I got mixed up here. Hi, Gail in Fish Creek. Hi.
Hi. I'm concerned with the fact that the EPA in the past has been very challenged financially because it's had to clean up the mess of corporations coming in and pilfering the environment. And they still want to be doing that, and we can see that in spades going on across the planet, but across the U.S. now with fracking and everything. They're all champing at the bit. But my concern is, too, that Mr. Gorsuch is now being brought in as Mr. Trump's choice for the Supreme Court, and his mother actually was heading up the EPA back during Reagan's time and was probably, I think, the only one cited for contempt of Congress because she was against lead regulations in gasoline, and she really went about trying to just cause all kinds of depletions in regulations and did such a horrible job that they finally got rid of her. But her son now is going to be brought up and possibly into the Supreme Court. And that concerns me because this looks like it's just an insider situation going on, and it's been going on, and it's not Trump, it's the group behind him. Find the group, and then they'll find somebody to be their front man. Because even, too, while no one's looking, the eminent domain definitions have changed for Wisconsin. So now that personal property can be taken for private corporate use. It used to be that it was for the government could take it for public use. Now it can actually be taken for corporations. And there was a corporation, actually, that helped Wisconsin legislators put that verbiage together. So that's changed. I don't know how many people are aware of that, too.
All right. Thank you very much. We need to move to other callers, too. Your response?
Yeah, well, that's a great point. Playing off the news from last night, the nomination of Judge Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. I think it would be a little unfair to, you know, take the sins of the mother against him and use that as a sort of a model for how he might treat the EPA. In fact, he actually has a very limited track record on energy and environment cases, so we don't know a ton of how he's going to treat these cases. One thing we do know is he's come out very, very strongly against what's known as the Chevron deference, which says the courts should defer to agencies in interpreting statutes that are maybe a little vague. That's something that's come up a lot with the EPA, DOI, some of these environmental cases that's allowed the administration to take some of the action that we saw. Gorsuch is very much against that. He said it was more than a little difficult to square with the founder's original intent. So a big question now is if he gets past the Senate, put on the court, what's going to happen to that Chevron deference? Is there going to be a challenge that really targets that that Chevron deference and what's going to happen to it long term?
Jason Plotz is our guest this hour, and we're talking about the tie-up, actually, of the confirmation of the new secretary for the EPA. The Democrats didn't attend the committee hearing today, and so the vote today, so that didn't go forward yet. We're also looking at what the administration has indicated so far. Their stance will be on a whole host of environmental issues. Jason is an energy and environment correspondent for National Journal. He has covered transportation and the EPA for Greenwire, and his writing has appeared in The Atlantic, Pacific Standard, Inside Climate News, and Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're welcoming phone calls at 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network. We go back to phone calls. Jocelyn in Sheboygan. Hi.
Hi. I've been so depressed. I don't know. I'm beside myself since he got elected. I mean, we've got to get rid of that electoral vote. I think it's ridiculous in these times. Two-thirds of the country didn't vote for him, and yet he's president. It's just insane. I mean, he's a pathological liar. Look at what he did with that woman, Kathy Yates. Says, you're fired. Maybe he still thinks he's on that show.
All right, let's talk about the environment. Can we do that?
I know, yeah. I know, but it all fits together. I mean, I am so worried about the environment. Everything, the one-party rule, if anybody can remember what happened when we had that last time, what happened to this country, financial meltdown and all the other stuff. What is it going to take? He's going to be in there for 4 years at least. He's turned everything upside down.
Do you worry that he will make decisions that will be quite harmful, Jason, to the environment?
It does appear that he is going to take a different approach than the Obama administration. Certainly environmentalists are very worried about the actions or the decisions that President Trump might take. I think one thing, one sort of reassurance that you're hearing a lot, and one thing I would say to your listener, is that the reality is Washington works very, 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 very slowly.
There's a lot of varies.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty slow place. The regulatory process is very slow by design. It invites a lot of comment. The House can move a lot of its legislation very quickly, but as we see, the Senate does not. Even their nominees are moving very slowly, and Democrats don't want to see these regulations be taken down. They don't want to see climate action be reduced. So Senate Democrats are certainly girding themselves to throw as much of a wrench in the process as they can. Stop legislation that they don't want to see. There's also just the reality that the bureaucracy moves slowly. There were a lot of civil service employees that came up under the Obama administration working on environmental protection, working on climate research. They don't necessarily want to see this stuff go away. And so there's a lot that actually the bureaucrats can do in the agencies to sort of slow walk things. So I think, yes, the philosophy of the Trump administration is going to be very different from an environmental perspective than what we've seen over the last 8 years. But the reality is the amount of action that can be taken kind of depends on how quickly everything moves. And, if you're thinking things are going to move quickly versus slowly, in Washington, lean towards the slower side.
Yeah. Let's talk for a moment about coal. He has talked to coal miners saying that he's going to bring back their jobs and talked about clean coal. Is that an oxymoron? Is there such a thing as clean coal now?
When people talk about clean coal, what they're talking about are plants that can reduce the impact of coal. There's also CCS, carbon capture and sequestration, which would capture some of the carbon dioxide emissions, basically put them underground or store them someplace so they're not going directly into the atmosphere. That technology is still a ways off. We saw, even under Obama, there was some research being done, some government support, but it didn't really move as quickly as people thought. When it comes to the broader outlook for the coal industry, again, as I said, a lot of it depends on the market. There's only so much the government can really do. So we'll see things like the Clean Power Plan, which is currently on hold, was seen as a big anti-coal measure because it gave incentives for natural gas and renewable power. That's on hold. It doesn't look like the EPA is going to bring that back. But just having that alone is not necessarily enough to bring the coal industry back because natural gas is still cheaper. It surpassed coal in terms of energy production last year. And the price of solar and wind dropped precipitously over the Obama administration. Those have become much more competitive. So the reality is if you're a utility looking where are you going to get your power, it may not make sense to go to the coal industry.
One more call, about a minute left. Stephanie in Washburn, hi.
Yeah, hi. I've got a question for your guest. I've heard from people on the ground, and I've seen drone footage, and it appears that Energy Transfer Partners is currently drilling at Standing Rock despite having the permit. And I'm wondering if anybody knows if that is true or not. I've heard it's a $50,000 a day fine if they are drilling, which is peanuts compared to the billions of dollars spent on the project already. My question is, do you know if that's true, and who enforces a project like that? Who oversees it to say, oh, you're not supposed to be drilling, you are, therefore you're fined? Who stops it?
Sure. I do not know if that's true. I'm not on the ground there, and I haven't seen the drone footage that you're talking about, so I can't say whether or not that's true. When it comes to enforcement, there are a number of different places that could come from. A lot of it is going to come from the state. Honestly, watchdogs, folks who see something on the ground, see some pollution or some sort of environmental violation, report it to the state agency, report it to the regional EPA office, and it sort of moves up the ladder for enforcement.
Thank you so much for the call. And thank you very much for being with us. It was a very, I know we covered a lot of territory, but thank you. We'll take many of these issues and talk about them for full hours down the road. Thanks, Jason.
Great. Thank you so much.
Jason Plautz, an energy and environment correspondent for National Journal. And we wanted to take a look at what the president has signaled that he's going to do when it comes to two large pipeline projects, what will happen with environmental regulations, what will happen with the head of the EPA, who will probably eventually be confirmed, and what Donald Trump's overall stance on environmental issues may be and what it means for our future. Thanks very much to Marika Saval for producing the show, and to Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in Milwaukee. Thanks for listening. News is coming up in just one moment from National Public Radio. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thank you very much for listening.